Okay, so Daniel Perek Gimel. So Nebuchadnezzar Malka Avad Slaim Didahav Rume Amin Shitin Petye Amin Shit Akim Akime Bivikat Dura Bimidinat Bavel. So Nebuchadnezzar the king made a statue made of gold. It was 60 amot, which is very tall, right? Somewhere between 90 and 120 feet, which is pretty tall.
Wait, how would it be 120?
If you think an amah is 2 feet, so then 60 times 2 would be 120. And he put it in Bikadura in Bavel. Okay. Now, what is going on?
Right.
So, the most compelling of the interpretations here are those that are offered by Rasha Gaon and others, Malbim, which is that this is Nebuchadnezzar's response to the dream. Mm-hmm. Which is, despite his brief moment of, oh, God is true, what's his next move? True, but let me make sure this never happens. Right? Let me make sure this never happens. So how does he do that? Right? What's going on in his head?
It's like the Tower of Babel kind of thing that they're making. Like.
Good. So we'll take that up in a second. But what does he do? So Rav Sanjigon says, well, he wants to... as we'll see, he's going to make the Jews worship this statue. Mm-hmm. So he thinks maybe if I can get... So what Rav Sajigon says is, oh, if I make the Jews worship Avodah Zarah, then that will, like, destroy their schud and destroy... Right, then they'll never come and destroy me. You know, the rock that destroys the statue.
Right.
Rav Migdan points out that there's a better, like, an even more specific read, which is, know the imagery. In the original Tselem, in the dream, he is what?
The head.
The head, and the head is made of gold. But everything else are... next three kingdoms made of other metals.
Right.
Right, and then the Cheres. So what does he do?
Makes all of them.
Makes all of it gold. Uh-huh. Right, meaning it's a symbolic response. It's no. There is...
me forever.
Correct. Me forever. I'm the gold. I'm not just the head.
I'm
right, and what am I going to do? I'm going to make, right, everybody bow to it, including...
the Jews.
Right, including the Jews, meaning all those kingdoms, including the Jews that are supposed to represent the people that will eventually come and... overturn my kingdom. No, I'll make them bow to me. Uh-huh. Right? It's a attempt at a coup,
right,
against this prophetic or whatever interpretation of Daniel. Now, the other thing, yes, that it seems to bring to mind is Migdal Bavel. Why Migdal Bavel?
Because they're scared of getting another flood.
Oh no! Okay, just in shot.
Oh, fine. They want to have a name in the world.
Because this is a large structure built in Bavel,
right,
just like Migdal Bavel in the valley, right? This is right.
Is it the same Bavel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Meaning it's the same place. Right. Here you have this king who's clearly driven by some level of hubris, whatever exactly it is, right? There's the huge machlokas in Migdal Bavel. Are they trying to fight God? Are they trying to worship Avodah Zarah? Are they trying to make a name for themselves? Right? What are they doing? What's their sin? Right? But whatever it is, their hubris is represented in some way in this massive structure they placed out in the middle of Bavel. And here you have this king of Bavel who does the exact same thing. Right? Now, Rav Migdan spends a lot of time in notes in the Midrashim. They note this, that the Midrashic understanding of Nimrod connects to this as well, because Nimrod is the same, right, type of king. But we won't. Let's not get too much into that. But this something along the lines of responding to the dream is what's driving. Nebuchadnezzar. Right, and the Malbim is really the one who takes Rasha Gaon and makes this point. And right, he says, "V'lochein hikbid she'ekulo mizahav." He made it all gold and not the other metals. And remember, this makes more sense if you think that this was an image that everybody knew of, right? The four ages of the world, or the five ages of the world. If everybody knew that these existed, for him to go against that imagery and say, no, there is this... And he says this is the height of the Tselem that was in his dream. Says in the Midrash already saw this and said exactly what Zev said, which is not just this happening in Bavel, but this is the same valley. Right. Not just a valley in Bavel, but they connected and say, Livnota Migdal, Shaita Kavanatam Gamkin Lakim Lamachurat Sumat Kifakol and Nizchit Mirosh Vatso. Because they were the same thing, trying to make this eternal Malchut. Lenetzach Harot Shamaimio, Leneged Negun Malchut Shamayim, right, to make this eternal kingdom against God. So conceptually, they're trying to do the same thing. Now, what he doesn't add is that what is Bavel? What was the folk etymology of Bavel? Right? Was Bavilu? Was the gate to heaven? Or in right? Or Shara Shamayim in Hebrew? Right, Bavel is just right. The folk etymology was that it was Shar HaShamayim, right? The gate to heaven, Bavilu.
Etymology, like not the actual etymology.
Yeah, it's not clear that that's the actual etymology, right? Meaning
because there's no Aleph.
Well, no. First of all, this is not Hebrew. No. In Bavel, the Babylonians viewed this as the word, but right, this is how they view themselves. So whether it originally was what it was doesn't matter, right? It's how they conceptualize of themselves. There's actually two. There's folk two folk etymologies. Yeah. Again, we don't know which is true, but these are the what they said. One was that. The other one. Was, oh, I actually didn't tell you guys this. This is important, right? There's another folk etymology, which is that it is from, and this is a very sharp point by Yoni Grossman, that the psukim interpret Bavel as mix up, but mix up can mean two things. Mix up can either mean mix up and spread out, like a centrifuge, or mix up, like mixed together, right?
Like a melting pot.
Like a melting pot. The Torah says Bavel is which one?
Centrifuge.
The self-conception of Bavel was? Melting pot, which is actually what you're going to see in this parak. Right? Because he views himself as the king of the world. Everything comes here, right? That Bavel notion is very sort of front and center in the in this parak.
Yeah, but why would... Where do you get the idea that Jewish view is centrifuge?
Oh, the Pasuk.
Because the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that Hashem spread them all out, and that's why it's called Bavel.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
That
no, I thought you meant the like the kingdom, like the
no, the word that that yeah. When in Migdal Bavel, when the Torah says why is it called Bavel, it's because they were mixed up, meaning they were mixed out, spread out, right? Which is a polemic against the self understanding of Bavel, which was no, everybody's supposed to come to us and melt, right? Melt, be we're the melting pot for the whole world. The answer is no, you're not. Okay. Now, I want you to listen to the language, because I know, right, you don't understand every word, but it's actually important to listen to the sound of these psukim. Sig-naya. Upachavaya Adargavazaraya Did Davraya the Tavraya the Tef Diftaye Vichol Shidami Dinta. Okay. He sent to all these leaders and all these different types of nations. Right. Okay.
Satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers,
judges. There you go, that's the English.
And provincial officials.
Good. Lemeita lachanukat salma. Diakei nuchanetzer malka. He called them to the inauguration. The inauguration of the statue. Now, there is a huge machlokas in the Mefarshim, whether this was, or we're going back to the Gemara, right? Where you see these dead, right, at least some of these dead reflected, one of these dead reflected, is this an Avodah Zarah or not? Right? Tosafot thinks...
Yes.
Not.
No.
Tosafot thinks this is just arrogance.
Yeah.
Right? Just, right? This is just a statue of himself. Right? The other possibility is that this is...
Tosafot also says God is a body, so do we really care?
Thanks. Right? that it was that this was a Avodah Zarah, right? Rashi implies that it's a Avodah Zarah, right? That's what he's saying.
Right.
Now, the Meiri has something in between, where he says, no, this was of himself, and he was making himself into a god.
Right.
Right, this was a Paro-esque thing. This was like, right, the line isn't so, right, that's the whole point. Right. There was this notion that kings were divine, right? There is a blurring of the lines. It's not clear whether this is straight Avodah Zarah, straight king worship, or
somewhere
in between, where there's king worship, which is Avodah Zarah. But of course, either way, it's a right. I mean, this is a symbol of his power. Whether it's worship my God or worship me or whatever it is, it doesn't really matter, right? Whether it's worship my God and then there's the divine right of kings, or it's worship me and I am a God, or worship me, right? They're all sort of at the same, right? Sort of somewhere between avodah zarah lishma and avodah zarah for power and power through avodah, right? It's all whichever day you say. There are nafkamin is lahalacha in terms of the Gemara's discussions of Yehar Gval Yavor and things like that, which we'll get to, of whether this is martyrdom and you have to give up your life for it, is it actually a chiyuv or not, that there is an afkamin to that. But conceptually, understanding the point of the parik, right, these are all related. Okay. Now, by the way, the Ibn Ezra says, we don't really know what all these different things are. There's some sort of leaders. I don't know what they are. I don't know what the difference is between them.
Oh, I said, there's okay. Satraps, prefects, governors.
Well, yeah, that helps me. Judges, right? Oh, the satraps and prefects, because I know the different roles between the satraps and prefects. Yes. Okay. So what do you say? Ben Dayin Mitkanshin. Barnaya signaya pachavaya dargavzarya gidavraya ditarvaya tiftaya vachoshenem edinta lechanuk atzalma diakim nebuchadnezzar malka. They come in the atzalma diakim nebuchadnezzar. Now, one of the things you just have to pay attention to this parak, and this is why I said listen, is the words come up over and over again. Why would that be true? Why do you think that this phrase is going to come up like 20 times? What's the effect? What do you think literarily?
Sorry, which phrase again?
This whole list of the satrap that
everyone wants to worship him,
or that he wants everybody there, yeah. Right? Meaning he doesn't just say them, right? It's every time the pasuk says that the people come, it lists it again, right? And all the king's horses and all the king's men, right? He doesn't just say all of them. He says, right? He goes through it. He goes to the list every time because that's the point, right? The parag is supposed to read as if everybody's there. So you just say it over and over and over again, right? Because that's the feeling, is that everybody is supposed to do it, which makes it all the more striking when somebody says no. Because if you just say everybody did it and a few people didn't, that's one thing. But if you list every person, right? You say, and he did it, 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 and he didn't do it, right? And you do that again. Right, and he didn't, she didn't, he didn't, she did, right, and they didn't do it, right? That sets the groundwork, right? Again, literarily, there's a literary beauty to the way the even though I can't, these words are tongue twisters, right? Okay, and this is what he says: V'charoza karei v'chaya lechon amrin amamaya umaya v'lishanaya. So, what does he say? The speaker went out.
You are commanded, O peoples and nations of every language. And then,
so what does this sound like?
Like a Purim. Like that.
So this sounds like Purim, right? Yeah. Where there's an emphasis on the word of the king goes to every person, every language, every country, every everything. And what else does it sound like? Migdal Bavel.
Right.
They're all speaking the languages, but this is what Maidan points out. In Migdal Bavel, the issue really isn't the language. Is that the language leads them to a joint mission, which is problematic. So what does he say? I don't care what language you're speaking, right? You're going to speak my language. And brilliantly, what is he going to do? Well, you'll see, he's going to say, I want you to bow. Do you know when I want you to bow? What would you want to do if everyone spoke a different language, but you wanted to eviscerate that because you wanted to move back to a world in which there was only one kingdom? How would you do that without the ability to actually speak to everybody?
Speak to everybody in their own language.
So you could do that, or come up with a universal language. What is the universal language? Come on. What do people talk about? The universal music. Thank you. Exactly. That's exactly what he does.
I'm saying Esperanto.
What?
Oh, yeah, nice.
Music, people. Music.
Math.
Right?
Math.
And therefore he says, Bi'idana tishma'un kal karna mashrokita katros sabecha psantirin sumpona. When you hear the
horn, pipe, zither, lyre, psaltery, bagpipe, and other types of instruments.
There you go.
Wait, bagpipe?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't stand behind the JPS translation of that.
Shipped in from Scotland.
Exactly. From the future, from Scotland. That's how powerful Nebuchadnezzar was. From Scotland, from the future. He had a time machine, Raya, The JBS translate is bagpipe. Great. Okay.
No, I don't know what bagpipe means.
I don't know. But he says when you hear the music,
it would note if they didn't. They usually say when they don't know what it is, and they didn't.
So they know it's a bagpipe. Okay. No, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Just because they think they know doesn't mean it's the,
whatever it is. But what's the point? The right. So when you hear the music, when you hear the music.
Oh yeah, it says horn, whistle, tambourine, drum, cymbal, flute, and all kinds of music.
No, that's JBS. JBS is more.
More accurate. Yeah.
Okay. The point is, when you hear the music, bow. Right. Because what are you doing? You're saying, look, it doesn't matter what language. And this comes back to the Bavel thing. Mm. Right? Remember that Bavel's self-image against what against what the Torah says, right? Is it's not the centrifuge, it's the melting pot. So he says, oh, you matter what language you speak, bow to me when you hear the music. Mm. Right? When you hear the music. And also, just imagine, right? Just think about the image. It is, right? It's everything you want in a... Right in a moment in which he's asserting his authority, it's pomp and circumstance. Right, it's when you hear the music. Right, the royal band. Right, the intense. Right, music. Bow. Right, fall on your face in the intensity of the. You can imagine. Right, the intensity of the moment he's trying to build up. Right, like there's a brilliant political strategy here. Right, this is why military parades work the way they do. Right, the music and. Everybody there and everybody marching in formation, right? That's what it is. Everyone moves together to the same music, right? That's why it's terrifying, right? You ever look at these, right? Whether it be the Nazis or be the, you know, the right? Right, or Russia, whatever, right? It's terrifying, right? Everyone moves in formation. Everyone moves at the same point. Everyone is on cue. It is synchronized to music, right? It's this, like, everyone melts into service of the state, right? And that's what this is, right? It's this... And you can understand why Nebuchadnezzar is doing this after he just heard that there's going to be a kingdom that overturns him. The answer is, no, there is not. Right? No, there is not. And then he says, and now this is very Esther-like, Uminda lo yipel vi yizgud beishate yitreme legoatu nura gekidta. And whoever doesn't bow when they hear the music will be thrown into the fiery furnace. Right? It's everything you want, right? There's everything you want in a nice despot, right? This is what you want, a tyrannical leader. This is what you want.
Right, it's also like Avram, like the Midrash.
Oh, suddenly you realize where's the Midrash and Avram come from? The answer is... Good. Yeah.
Were you saying it's similar to what was the thing there?
And that's where the Midrash gets it from, because the Midrash says the following. The Midrash says that when Avram was thrown into by Nimrod in the Givshan Ha'esh, Gavriel said, "Let me save him." And Hashem said, "No, you'll have your time. You will save Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah." The Midrash could not be drawing the parallels more clearly, right? To say that this is conceptually similar to the way they understand Avram, right? But the Torah never says about Avram. Now, there are two possibilities for the Avram story. One is that it happened, and that the Midrash is recording a tradition, which in this particular case is not actually a crazy thing to say. It's never a crazy thing to say. It's always possible the Midrash is doing it. In this particular case, that tradition is found in every single Jewish tradition that we have. Jewish, early Christian, every ancient text we have, whether it's within the current Jewish canon or not, right? All of them have versions of that story. Everything. Right? It's like the oldest story in Judaism. So it's possible this is just an oral tradition that was passed down. It's also possible that it's not. It's a Midrash, and it's reading Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, obviously, what is it doing? It's saying that, I think it's doing two things. One is saying Avram wasn't chosen for no reason. It was chosen because he sacrificed for God. But I think it also is telling you that the kochot that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah had are inherently Jewish, because that strength was already present in our founding father. Right? I think that's also part of what the Midrash is doing. So I don't know. I have no firm opinion on whether it happened, right? And in fact, that's why Jews have this koach, whether it didn't happen, and that's what the Midrash is telling us. I don't know. But it's clear that, A, they are connected, and that the Midrash has to be understood in light of this story, as the background to the story in Chazal's mind, right? Either as the actual background, or reading the qualities of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah and saying whether or not this happened to Avram, Avram would have done it, because that is his personality, right? The personality that we see in Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah is what Avram must have had, whether or not he was ever tested in that way, right? which would be the Midrashic way of reading this.
Yeah.
Right? It's saying, it doesn't mean that Avram, it means that Avram would have done it. Right? But again, the Midrash that said, yes, Gavriel comes. And why Gavriel? Because Gavriel is the angel of fire. And therefore, the angel of hail wanted to put out the fire, and Gavriel said, no, don't do it, because that is not such an ace. But if the angel of fire does it, mm-hmm. it's an ace, but, right? It's a miracle within a miracle, so let me do it.
Like Mitzrayim.
Very good. Many times. Okay. So he says, now, some of the Mepharshim say, well, where is Daniel? Because Daniel would not appear in this parak. Some of the Mepharshim actually say the answer is, he sent him away because he was terrified. Because he's scared of Daniel. He doesn't want Daniel because he can't throw him into the fire. Right? Because he doesn't know what will happen. He already thinks he's somewhat divine. So he just needs to like get him out of the picture. Not so much, but he's not there. Okay.
You want to hear what JPS has to say about it?
What?
So they say that it's an earlier tradition where there's a separate story of this thing happening with three guys, but it wasn't really connected to the Daniel story, but oh look, thematically they're so similar, let's just combine the two stories and, you know,
sure,
not edit in the part about Daniel.
Right, that's not the type of approach I would take here. I see no reason to take
it.
Especially since this story is so beautifully thematically connected to the previous one. Yeah. It's not like...
It doesn't seem like exactly.
Right, they could also just stitch in Daniel into the story.
That's the weird thing, is that they could have... Right, you could have just said Daniel, but in the book of Daniel, we just leave him out.
Right.
It's just the friends. Okay, they get their spotlight too. So he says, Kol kaveldina bezimna kidei shamin, kol amaya, kol karna, mashokita, katrei shabichab. Right, you just hear the thing. And every time they would hear all those instruments, right, then all those people would bow, right? It doesn't just say the instruments, the people. It says, it lists all the instruments again, and it lists all the people again, because, right, that's what, it's overwhelming, right? It's, Kol kavel dinabe zimna krivu guvrin kazdayin. And then we meet our enemies. Who are our enemies?
The
Chaldeans. Who? What do they do?
They accuse the Jews.
Right. One time, what is Achal Kartzehon? What is Achal Kartzehon? It's Unkelus's translation of Rachil.
Wait, did Unkelus translate this?
No. And Lotelech Rachil, he translates it as Lotelech Kartzehon or Kortzin. Right. This Aramaic word. Right. Right, Kartzehon is a rachil, is a tale-bearer. So what do? They tale-bear on the Jews.
Yeah.
Right, the Chaldeans come and tattletale, right, to Nebuchadnezzar. It's worse than tattletale, fine. And what do they say? Anu v'amrin l'Nebuchadnezzar malka, malka l'almen chaye. O king, live forever. Ant malka samta te'em. Dichol enash diyishma kol karna mashrokita katros shabicha besanterin v'supneya v'chol zinei zimara yepel v'yizgud letzelem dahava. You said anyone who hears all those instruments should bow to the golden statue. Umindi lo yepel v'yizgade yitremele goatun nura yakidda. And anyone who doesn't bow gets thrown into the fiery furnace. Ite guvrin yehudain. Right, even in modern, if you hear someone, if you didn't know what language they were saying, and suddenly you hear them saying, right, Itai Guvrin Yehudain, you know it does, it's not good. Right, you know it's not good. It just, right? It does, it does. It really does, right? It does, right? It really does. It's like, it doesn't matter what, like, it just sounds bad, right? But that's exactly what it is, like, literally. Throw them into the fire. It's not like...
It's Tayudin.
Yes, exactly. Itai Guvrin Yehudain Dimanit Yaton Alav. Vidit midinit bavel shadrach meshach vaved nego guvraya ilech lo samu alaych malka teim le'elahach lo palchin u'tzelem dahava didakimt lo sagdin. You know those people you appointed over others?
Right.
It's like the jealousy is dripping. You know those Jews that you appointed over others? They don't worship your gods and they don't bow
to this. This is sounding very Haman.
Right. Yes, it is. Right.
Oh, look. Look at those Jews not bowing.
Right, and it's not clear whether these are two critiques. Right, they don't bow to your God, and they don't bow to the Tzelem, or they don't bow to your God, i.e. the Tzelem. That's why it's very ambiguous. Fine. So what happened? Be'adayin Nebuchadnezzar birgaz v'chama. which is, of course, what it says about Haman, right? Bechema, right? They said, bring them to me. Bring those people to me. In fury, in ane Nebuchadnezzar amar lahon, hatzda? Shadrach Meshach v'nego lelahai lo etichun palchin l'tzam da'avad yakim lo sagdin. Right? Right, hatzda is... How do you translate Hatzda? Rashi says, Shemag Zeratait Sadu, right?
I'm looking for, oh.
Meaning, is this empty to you? Right? Is it something you push to the side that you heard my law?
My God.
What? Yeah. Like, did you not hear my law that you should worship my God? You should bow to my... Well, so that's not clear. Right, it's not clear, is it my God or is it my God and the Tzelem? Because, right, they have two critiques. You don't worship our gods, and it's not clear if that's the statue is his God or those are two things he's not doing. Well, it's not clear. That's right. No. Or they also don't worship his gods.
Yeah.
Right, separate. Meaning, they don't do a lot of things.
What?
Wait, what did you say?
Yeah.
I mean, so did like
Officeware. Yeah. She says, Kain Tegun next time you hear it, if you don't bow, you are going to be thrown into the fire. And who is this God who is going to save you from me? Now, what do they say to him? And this is one of the most amazing psukim in Tanakh. Anu, what do you think they're going to say?
Our God, Hashem.
Our God! What do they say? Nobody. Nobody. Ano Shadrach Meshach v'Avednego v'Armin. The Malk of Nebuchadnezzar. Lo Shchashchen Anachna al Dunav Vidkam Lahava Laha Tavutach. These words, honestly. Ted Zion, right? They said to him, what do they say? Lo Shchashchen Anachna. What does that mean?
We don't know.
We're not worried. We don't care. We don't care what you said. Said, God could save us. He said, he could save us. Right? What did they say?
Doesn't matter if he says it.
Yeah. He could save us. He might not. Meaning, we believe in a God who could save us. And if he doesn't save us, okay. But we're not worshiping you. Not happening. Right? He says, V'hein lo yedil avilach. Right? If he doesn't want to, so he won't. B'seder. And that proves nothing. But we're not worshiping. Right? They say, we're not expecting a miracle. We're not expecting a miracle. Now, the Midrash plays in this beautifully with Avram, because remember, right? What does the Midrash say? Yes, that Avram was saved because he went into the fire with no intent of being saved. And Haran said, if Avram dies, then I'm with Nimrod. And if Avram is saved, that means Avram's right. So he went into the fire only to be saved. So what happened?
He died.
The only people who get to be saved are people who are willing, right? Are going in because they believe in God, but aren't depending on a miracle. Now that, as you can imagine, made Nebuchadnezzar a shtickle angrier. Right? Just a little bit angrier. Shtickle! V'adei Nebuchadnezzar hitmelei chema utzleim anpoi ishtanei al shadrach meshach v'agino ana v'amar l'meze latuna chad shiva al dichazei l'mazyei. So he said, here's what we're going to do. We are throwing you in and I am cooking it up to 7 times its normal heat. Okay.
How do you do that with ancient technology?
You just keep adding wood. I don't know. I don't know. Or you add things that have higher. You add things that burn at a higher temperature, right?
Oh yeah.
Right. I don't know. Ulugurengi rechayel di vechele amar chapato l'shapach l'shadrach meshach v'avednego lemir melatun nura yakita. And he tells his soldiers to capture them, to tie them up, and chuck them in. And how hot is it? Beidin guvrai lech kfitu basar b'lehen batzijon of karbel ton of lushon or miu lego atun nurayakita. They wrap them up in all their clothes and their turbans and everything to throw them in, right? So they have plenty of things to burn, right? So this, right, adding, right, they dress them up as much as possible to slow it down, to have there be more things burning, everything. Kol kavel dinam in di milat malka. But it was so hot that the people who threw them in were burned to death, died approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's how hot it was, right? He didn't even like, right, think it through, right? The soldiers who go to chuck them in die on the spot.
Nice.
Yeah, great story. And these three men fall in tied up into the fire. He said, people. Didn't we just throw three people into the fire? Anev Amar, yeah, they said that's exactly what we did. Anev Amar, Hana Chazei Guvrin Arba'a, Shirayin Mahalchin Begonura V'Chaval Lo Itay Bahon Rivei Derivat Damei Levar Elohein. I see four, and they're not affected by the fire, and the fourth one looks like an angel. What, pray tell, is going on? Right? What is going on? Now, right, some of the versions suggest that maybe he has a Havamina, this is Daniel. Right? Like, that's what he's worried about. Like, right? That is the first verse. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. Right? Like, and Daniel already has this mythical...
Yeah.
And again, for Chazal, this is Gabriel. Or some angel. He said, if your God has saved you, please come out. Right? Essentially, that's what he says, right?
His translation seems like he already acknowledges it. As servants of the Supreme God.
Right, servants of being. He already realized that. He said, like, come out. Right, like, he is thrown. Because remember, if the whole story is he's trying to do everything in his power to upturn the imagery, right? And then they go in, the fire is so hot, and then, right?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, God. Right? And this is the amazing thing, Nebuchadnezzar, is that this educational thing happens. This is like Paro, remember? Right? There is one God. No, there isn't. Yes, there is. No, there isn't. Yes, there is. No, there isn't. Right? It just keeps going and going. Right? This is Nebuchadnezzar. And now, umidkan shin achasha panaya signaya pachavaya v'hadavrei malka chazayin l'gurin ilech diloshlit nura b'geshma. So all those people, remember that before we're bowering, all those prefects and satraps and all those people see them and they're like, nothing. Usare shehon lo hitcharach. Right? This is the English phrase, right? Not a hair on their head was singed. Right? Right, don't touch a hair on his head. This is where it comes from.
Yeah.
Right? Visar balehon lo shinov reyach nur lo adat behon. Their clothes didn't change. They didn't even smell of smoke. Right? That's the image here. Right? It's amazing. It's just an amazing story. Like, there's a reason that this, like... Anei Nebuchadnezzar v'amar berich elohahon tishadrach meshach v'avadnego. Dishlach malachei v'sheziv lavdoi diitrachitzu aloi umelat malka shaniu v'yahavu geshmehon dilo yefachun lois gedun lechol elah lohein le'elohehon. He said, blessed is the God of these three men who sent an angel to save them because they would not worship any god but he. Umini sim te'em di chol am uma ulishan di ye mar shalu al elohe hon di shadrach meshach vaveg nego hadomin yit aved uvete nivali ishtave kol kavel di loite la haron lo yikol la hatzala kidena. And anybody in any language who says anything about their God you are dead, and I will destroy your house because, right? Yes, right? This was the same guy who said he would do that if they didn't guess his dream. Now he says, right, the striking thing between Perek Bet and Perek Gimel. In Perek Bet, he said, anyone who can't predict my dream, I'll kill him and destroy their house. And now what does he say? If you say a word in any language about God, right, 20 seconds before, he's like, I don't care what language you speak, you bow to me. Now, anybody, I don't care who you are, you say anything about their God, I'm going to kill you and your family and your house and everything. Because no one can save like this. But then I Malka, and he promotes all these people, right, in their own merit. Right? Eloi shvar kadavala chavaya atohi kama ravravin vitim hohi kama dakivin malchute malchut olam shaltine imdar vidar. What's that translation? And see if you recognize some of these things. Right, what does he say? The next three psukim, lamed aleph to lamed gimel.
He said to all people and all nations of every language that inhabit the whole world, may your well-being abound. The signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me, I am pleased to relate. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom's an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion endures throughout the generations.
Is that to him?
Hashem Yimloch Lalam Va'eh, right? Vador Vador, Halidukah, right? All this. But where do you see this? Right, think about it. Paro, what was the ultimate goal?
Right,
that he should teach the world about God. And here Nebuchadnezzar sends a letter to all his kingdoms, right? Not about his own greatness, bow to me. I have become convinced that there is an awesome God, and it is the God of the Jews.
Right?
This is like, it's a wild, wild story. Now, I think some of the points that come out. First of all, this highlights what we talked about already a few weeks ago, right? Tamar Verdiger's point that the importance of this re-education of society about the greatness of God, right? Is that, and you see it in this parak, the more Nebuchadnezzar pushes, the more human beings try to assert their absolute control of the world, the more Hashem pushes back and says, I need to re-educate, I need to remind people there's a God, right? And it works. Yes, he goes. He's like manic, right? Because right, from one side to the other, in Echanami, that's true, right? But it's clear that that's what this book is about. Now, you also see this commitment to Chanani, Mishael, Azariah, right? They fit in the Daniel model.
Right.
In your face, Judaism. The way we're going to survive in Galut is we are going to be in your face, even if it means you kill us. And that's what this book became the model for Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, specifically for all the martyrs and the Crusades. This is one model of what Judaism looks like in Galut, is we are in your face, Jewish, it doesn't matter what you do to us, you can't do anything to us. Right? And even if you kill us, that won't shake our faith in God. Because we know he could save us. If he does or doesn't is not the point. But the point is our commitment. And for Christians also, early Christians when they were prosecuted, this is where they turn. And yes, the Midrash of Avram is a way of saying either Avram actually was like this, or those qualities are inherent in who Avram is. This is what it means to be Jewish. Right? This is a model of Judaism which is celebrated throughout Daniel. And this parak is like it, right, is just the strongest. And now, as I said, the question of whether this is actually about Avodah Zarah or not is interesting. It has a lot of halachic implications. And there are interesting sugyas about this. Like the Gemara brings this one of examples and says that, first of all, the Gemara says that had he threatened not to burn them alive, but to beat them incessantly, they actually would have given in. Which is either a statement of reality, that they just wouldn't have been strong enough to stand up to it. The Gemara. It's Gemara in Ksuba, Islam Gimel. That they would have Palchu L'Tzelem. Which is a wild statement, the Gemara. So, now, that could just be a descriptive one, is they wouldn't have, they just couldn't have handled it. That as bad as it is to be burned alive, to be tortured constantly, like, you break down eventually. The Kundras in there actually says that no, that is actually true, that the Shalosh Chamuros are only Yehorek Val Yavor, but not torture Val Yavor. And you're actually allowed to do that. It's actually a normative statement, which is a crazy sheet to end up itself.
Wait, what?
That even though Avodah Zarah is Yehorek Val Yavor, it's you don't have to suffer incessantly for it. No. No, but it is a shita in the kuntrasin. It's quoted in the Shimon Betzer. So it's the halachic issues. Now Tosfot argues that that's the wrong conclusion to derive from here. Tosfot says because Tosfot l'shitasim think this isn't avodah zara. They think it's just, and therefore this wasn't avodah zara, and that's why the Gemara could say that because it wasn't really a chiyuv yaharik v'al-yabur. They were,
but then weren't they?
So good. This is Tosfot l'shitasim. So there's basically three shita and rishonim. The Rambam says whenever it's yaharik v'al-yabur, you have to. Whenever it's yabur v'al-yaharik, you're not allowed to die. Tosfot said no. There's three that you have to, and 610 that you're allowed to give up your life for.
I mean, like all the mitzvot you're allowed to.
And this is one of Tosha's proofs. His other proof is the Gemara says in Psachim that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were inspired by the frogs, that they jumped in to the ovens and gave up their lives in the Makkah of Sfaradeya, and they said if frogs would do it, Kalvachomer, we will. And they say, why do they learn it from the frogs? Why didn't they learn it from the fact that it's a Chiyuv Yahar Gval Yavor? It must be, this wasn't a case of Chiyuv. They chose to do it. There's a third sheet with Milke Yosef, which is all mitzvot are Yavah v'Yaharig, except anything with Yavah v'Yaharig, you're not allowed to give up your life, except a Talmud Chacham, where the generation needs a statement to be made, then, because of the necessity of Kiddush Hashem,
then you can be a martyr.
And this is also their proof.
That seems very
right. So this story becomes the proof of Toshot's position that you're allowed to give up your life even if you're not obligated, and then Muke Yosef's position that even if you think it's not usually true, when the generation needs it and you're a leader that represents Judaism, that you're allowed to go out of your way. And both of those halakhic positions fit beautifully into this story. That even if it's not an obligation, they are making a statement. This is fundamentally an act of Kiddush Hashem. This is, and it highlights the point. According to the Rambam, they were chayav to do this. According to Tosfot, according to the Mugezer, they're not. They're making a calculated decision to live a Judaism, or die in a Judaism, where the way they practice Judaism is, I don't care what happens. I don't care how bad things look. We are going to be in your face. We believe in this no matter what happens. And that is really the theme of Daniel that we've seen. Like, that is the type of Gaulish Judaism that is expressed in Daniel. And there's a reason, as I said, that the martyrs in the Crusades, the Jews who justified killing them, not just dying, but killing themselves. And this is, by the way, another interpretation. Some of the Balei Tosfot, who were defending the positions of the martyrs, who didn't just allow themselves to be killed, but killed themselves and their children, claim that that's really what might have been expected of them here, is to kill themselves before they go in. Now they didn't, whatever, but they also look at this story and start asking, but they look at this model, and it becomes the model of martyrdom for so many generations of Jews and Christians, and basically anyone who takes the Hebrew Bible as important. And the halachic discussion is fascinating, but it also sheds light on the conceptual issues. Now, it is possible that they're wrong, right? That they put the Jews at risk. Now, you have similar, it's unlikely. That's a very strange read to have. But this really, obviously, you should see the connections to the whole Mordechai story, where the Mordechai thing is the same thing. Why is he not bound? Why is he risking everybody's life? It's totally unclear whether there's any reason for that. The Torah, or the actual Megillah doesn't say anything about Avodah Zarah. It's not clear why he's not bowing. And he's putting all the Jews in danger. But the result of it is that he becomes identified as the Jew, and it becomes a Kiddush Hashem after all the Jews being in danger. That same phenomenon is not really clear what's going on. Another halakhic discussion which emerges here is the possibility that it's legitimate. And this is how they might understand the Gemara, is that it's legitimate to violate the Shalosh Chamuros to save Klal Yisrael. And one of the discussions here is does this do these stories prove that that's true or not? And that's another big machloket. Is that an exception? Okay. Rav Midan also notes that the truth is that there's another way of reading the story entirely, which is in terms of a halachic perspective, which is the Gemara says that there was a machlokas about which mitzvot were Yaharik v'al Yavor, and there were shittos that it was only a vote Zara and only in public, and it wasn't until the vote in Aliyat Beit Nidzah that they actually voted and said it's these three. Which means that this, Chazal already telling you, this was in flux. There was a time in history where people believed either more mitzvot Yaharik v'al Yavor or less. We know in the time of the Maccabees, people believed that Shabbos was also Yehar Gval Yavor, because we know that the first group of soldiers died rather than fight on Shabbos. They just let themselves be killed, and that's the Chashmonim's Chiddush was, no, Shabbos is not Yehar Gval Yavor. We know that from the Book of Maccabees, that Matizyahu gets up and says, that was the wrong halachic decision, we can't do that, we'll lose. And they fought on Shabbos. So we know that there were people who were more machmir than Chazal, and we know that Rabbi Ishmael is much more makel and says that it's only Avodah Zarah and only in public, which is requires martyrdom. So he says it's possible that there was a position in Chazal that Chazal are entertaining that there is no such thing as any cardinal sin, and that's why this was voluntary. Right? It wasn't until later when we voted that wasn't the position, right? So you have to remember that these things were in flux. Chazal are aware of the fact these are in flux, and you don't. Sometimes you're tempted to read halacha back into Tanakh, but when you know that there was a machlokes all the way into the time of Chazal, there's no reason to say that this wasn't an open halachic question at the time of Hanan and Mishael Vazaria. So the halachic questions are really quite interesting in terms of dealing with martyrdom, and this is one of the primary stories that they look to as the source of it, because it is such a rich story on so many levels. I love this parak. It is a look. Daniel is an awesome book, and this parak is just, even when we meet the other three characters, really, it is. Yeah. Okay. Good. Awesome. Okay.